Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat podcast, presented as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Paul Daner Jr. and Jim Ozarski, your Bengals beat writers, Cincinnati.com. And the Cincinnati Inquirer, Jim, how we doing?
Good, good. Feeling good. Still hate spring, but, you know, we got mock draft 3.0 out, and we're rolling, I guess, with the Cincinnati.com and draft coverage.
This is the eye of the hurricane. Like, pretty much, we're into the mock draft 3.0 kicks off. A draft barrage. People are going to have fatigue of us here very soon between this, and it leads right into the massive 12-part series behemoth that's going to start this week, and then we'll be into draft week where we're going to have some other stuff, some other goodies for you, BBP action. It's been exhausting putting it all together, and if people are wondering, I know for me, while I have not been as active on the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Reddit subs the last few, like the last week or so, it's because I've been in the bunker, man. I've been in the bunker with the draft coverage, trying to get all this stuff out. It's about to start rolling out, so yeah, it feels like eye of the hurricane for me right now.
Yeah, I think you like being in the eye of hurricane, Paul.
No.
Because people love the mocks, and I think you love the mocks too.
No, I love when the hurricane leaves and there's just rubble everywhere. Like, I like that because that means the hurricane's gone and we can just start the job of picking up the pieces of what happened. Because I like what it is, the doing it. I always regret it. Like, I always love coming up with the ideas. And I love it being done. I always regret it for like that middle part. Like, why did we do this? Why did we decide to expand it this year? Why are we doing these things? But then it's a labor of love, Jim. That's what it is.
It is. All for you. All for you.
Yeah. A quick rundown of what we're going to have in the BBP today. This is sort of the offensive draft preview. We're going to get in a little bit more into the who. Last week, if you listened to our positional breakdown, we sort of did a ranking of where we think the Bengals see things falling in their minds for what positions they need to fill, how urgent those are, and went 1 through 12 on those. This week, we're going to kind of get into the who of those positions. What guys are Bengals fits, when they will show up, and all those types of things. So that's what we're going to hop on to today. I have this week's draft guest is NFL Media's Lance Zierlein. Lance is the man where if you have read any of those scouting profiles on NFL.com, you've read his because he does all of them, all 500 plus scouting profiles he works on year round. He's just an absolute draft beast. So he was kind enough to take about 10-15 minutes out with me and talk about some of those Bengals fits. So I have that coming a little bit later. We will power rank airplane food thanks to a reader suggestion. It is like that spring break season, a lot of people taking flights, and we've both recently been on lots of flights. So there's never a bad time to make fun of airplane peanuts. We'll try not to go all Seinfeld too much on this, but you know, that will be coming up as well a little later. Let's start, before we get to all of that though, Jim, with a little bit of the news of the day. So Eric Reed, older brother of Justin Reed, who I've been writing about in the safety prospects all day, but much more prominent, has been in, or is currently in as we record right now, Cincinnati, on a free agent visit. I'll let you fill the airspace as to why this is a big deal, other than the fact that the Bengals are still kind of pursuing this safety market that has bottomed out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the easy thing is to say, hey, they listen to the BBP, right?
Yes.
but no, I think it's clearly, you know, the team examining all avenues to make that 46-man roster better. You know, we've written about the safety market. This team examined it as far back as the combine. And look, Eric Reed's a Pro Bowler, Kenny Vaccaro and Trey Boston at various points, you could say, are what, like borderline Pro Bowlers?
Potentially, yeah.
How do you not look at that and say these guys are still on the market? Could they just be available now at whatever price point? So I think now, obviously, this is the next step in the process. You go from conjecture, you go from wondering to let's have this guy in. And what does that mean? That means ownership gets to meet with them. Coaches all get to meet with them. Medicals are taken. You know, he had a torn biceps 2 years ago. Last year, I think a sprained posterior cruciate ligament in his left knee. You know, missed a couple games. So, I mean, you're advancing that process a little more. The last time they did this with Reed, Paul, was back in 13 when they really did pre-draft work on him. 49ers grabbed him at 18. Obviously, we know Bengals took Tyler Eifert at 21. So, I mean, their history with Eric Reed goes back 5+ years. As we record this, no deal is imminent. I think the team, the Bengals, as we know, don't like to set the market for unrestricted free agents. They'll do that for their own guy, Geno Atkins, AJ Green, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, I don't know, Paul, if they're ready to just say, here's some money. I think they're now ready, though, if another team comes in to, okay, that's what you were working with, let's come back to this. You know what I mean? And I also think with the on-field / off-field part of this, which was Eric Reed, you know, demonstrating with Colin Kaepernick in 2016, continuing that demonstration in 17, you know, he's come out and said he's done protesting during games or before games. He said, look, I'm going to take that elsewhere. I'm going to take my activism in other areas. I think the message got lost, which, interestingly, Paul, aligns perfectly with Marvin Lewis and the Bengals, because what's Marvin about? Marvin's about football. He will let you do whatever off the field. If you have causes, from the what could be highly politicized, like Michael Johnson and what he does in town with Cincinnati police officers and kids, to, you know, what the other guys do from basic to camps, like at the very surface level. But just keep it there. So it's interesting, Paul, that like those planets have aligned, if you will. And I think that's probably part of the discussion as well, is how does all of that fit together?
Yeah, I think that's the interesting part of it is I'm going to go ahead and just read off what Marvin told me earlier at the league meetings in Orlando when we were asking about, you know, guys and these protests, and that was very much a topic there in Orlando. He said, quote, "Our guys have been excellent in this situation because we are about playing football. They have other agendas. This is not the place to be. On Sunday for us and throughout the week in the building, it's about football. That's how I've approached it. Whatever happens from the league standpoint, we will go along with, but that is what our guys know, and they handle that for me. I don't have to have a voice. They understand what I'm about. Anything beyond that gets in the way of us doing what we want to do, and that's winning football games." What you mentioned in with Reed that I think is important, because the team does not see, as they like to call they, politics and football, as, quote, bedfellows. They understand if Eric Reed is about his causes, they love that. They're all about players that are about something. You wrote an unbelievable piece about that a couple years ago. Guys that be about a cause. And you mentioned Michael Johnson and the police operative that there was no bigger supporter than the Bengals in helping Michael Johnson go through his conversations between youth in the community and the police and trying to keep that get that conversation going and understanding that there's an issue there. They're pro causes, but they just don't want it to get in the way of winning football games. And that sounds like that's where Eric Reed has landed on all of that. And I agree with you. I think that makes it a great fit if they can find a way to do that. And it's been apparent. Look, that takes one less thing off the plate when you start looking at the draft. There's no doubt the Bengals are in the middle of this draft mess. Now they're in the eye of their own hurricane, and they're saying, "Do we really want to be using one of our top three or four picks on a safety when there are options on in a bottomed out market just sitting there for us? Let's really explore this. We can check that box off now, and it opens us up to hit other positions that are really are maybe more of need as we fill out rounds 1, 2, and 3.
No, you're right, Paul. I agree. I mean, look, this team, this goes back to, you know, again, what Marvin Lewis said back on January 3rd, where he's like, look, to be better in free agency – means finding better players that fit and can actually produce, but also looking at the draft. And if the draft isn't going to yield us that guy, then instead of reaching, let's fill it the other way. Now, look, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here right here today and say the draft is devoid of safety playmaker. We know that's not true. But we also know the Bengals are at 21, have other needs. Because frankly, they're two safeties. I mean, let's be honest, they're signed through 2020. It would require other decisions being made. You're right. Like, why say we need a safety when a one-year, whatever million-dollar deal is potentially available for guys who are still just 25, 26 years old, have a lot of game film, have a lot of tape, that you know what they can do? And frankly, again, are not Carlos Dansby. No knock on Carlos, but it's – but you know what I mean? Like the Pro Bowlers or guys who are still performing at a really high level coming in.
Yeah, Eric Reed, just a little bit of background. I mean, he broke onto the scene as a rookie. That's when he made his Pro Bowl. Yeah. He played in all 16 games. He had 4 picks that year. In his second year, also had a great season. He had 3 picks that year for 138 yards. And so, came in, started right away, really made an impression. Since then, has not been as much of a playmaker, but he's only 26, you know, 5-year starter in the league. That's a guy that can come in and compete. You can work into some 3 safety formations. So there's a lot of options that he brings in. Where the market is now, you're getting him on the relative cheap. I we've been talking about this in recent weeks. It seemed like the Bengals in this market were a perfect fit, whether it was Reed, whether it was Trey Boston, whether it was Kenny Vaccaro, whoever it was, it seemed like a kind of match made in heaven that things fell this way for them. So we'll see if the Bengals pull the trigger on Reed or if these are just conversations about how he views himself as his role on a franchise, if they're just kind of – you know, testing the waters on that. We'll see how it all plays out. Or maybe it's already played out and you're listening to us and like, can we scroll forward, please? Because they already made the signing. So anyway, so that's kind of where that's at. Let's move it forward now and dive into the draft. So Mock Draft 3.0, it's out, baby.
Yeah.
It's out. And guess what? Mock Trade.
Oh.
Mock Trade. Exciting. I did it. Isn't it?
It is.
It's really – I don't sense that you're really that excited.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited because I do like when you do the trades. I'm actually more – not so much for the Bengals. I'm more interested at your top half of the draft trades.
Yeah.
Because I think all the trades should happen and all the things should be messed up and you know.
Well, they do.
You still have
and it's been the year of the trade anyway. So why would that not continue into the time when most of the trades actually do happen traditionally? But, or maybe that's what's happening now is everything is flipped. All the trades happen, not around the draft. And during the draft, no trades. Maybe that's what I doubt that.
Right.
I think we're going to see many more. The ones that I have, I mean, Buffalo's just positioned themselves so much. And I think that they will. I think that they will give up the house to move all the. They've been making too many moves, and there's nothing sitting. There's nothing for them at 12. It makes no sense. They're not going to get any of the top four guys at 12. They're going to have to suck it up, pay the Giants price, and move all the way up. Or I guess they would be hoping that the guy that they really want is sitting there at four and try to proposition Cleveland. I just think they move up. And then Cleveland, think about the position. I mean, the Browns are just going to be sitting so pretty at four. They're going to be sitting there. If there's going to be one good QB left, and anybody that wants one is going to have to come up and do it, and they're going to sit there and say to the highest bidder, or more preferably to Denver, so they can still get Saquon Barkley and add a pick or two just for making the move one spot back. So anyway, I think all that's going to happen. But let's focus. Let's transition here over to the Bengals trade. So what we've talked about, you wrote about this in the mailbag last week, and it's been talked about for a while, really ever since the Bengals moved back from 12 to 21, and you see their obvious need at center. And you say, yeah, Billy Price, it's maybe a little high for him. So maybe if there's an opportunity to move back a little further and add another pick and give you some leverage in some other situations, that would be something worth doing. If you felt like you had if you had three or four targets, which I think that they would in that range, and you could find someone who wanted to move up for whatever reason, maybe it would be for Lamar Jackson, or maybe it would be for they feel like the last of the big, you know, guards or tackles or whatever, whoever you're there after. I have them move. I have Atlanta coming up and taking Will Hernandez, but just Atlanta moving up because they want to get their guy. And the Bengals move back five spots to 26. And so if you're into draft trade chart math, that's like 100 points, which nets. I have them then adding Atlanta's third round pick, which is number 90 overall, which is about 140 points. So to try to net that out, they swap fours. Are you still with me, Jim? They're swapping fours now. And so that evens it out a little bit more. So the Bengals would get number 26 by moving back five spots, add the Falcons third, number 90, and then they would have number 126, and then the Falcons would end up with number 21 and number 112. So you end up – the Bengals now have three third-round picks, three fifth-round picks, three seventh-round picks. And the thing that you would get from that, I don't think they would use all of those, but you could package those to move up if there was a guy – if you could add a third and maybe move up in the second into the early 30s if somebody slides – there, hell, maybe they end up going offensive line. Maybe it's Billy Price, Isaiah Wynn, or something like that. And all of a sudden, they have totally reformed their entire offensive line, and just by maneuvering around. I don't know where would you place for you the odds on them. I think they're going to be they're open to moving. Again, a lot of it depends on how it falls. But I you know, what do you think on that front, on the trade?
Yeah,
front?
I think they become more open to it if your mock plays out the way, and I personally agree that it will, that all five first round quarterbacks go before number 21. I think I think Lamar Jackson is the X factor there. And why does one guy matter? Well, one guy matters because it's either a team really moving up to get that guy, or like some of these other scenarios you've written down to me, and that's what matters, because that's what we talked about last year with John Ross at 9, was like, oh, what if all the quarterbacks go? Well, the quarterbacks didn't go. They didn't all go before 9. Obviously, Mahomes came 10, blah, blah, blah. If they all go, that means the Bengals are sitting there with the 16th best position player, you know, on their board, right? Well, we've known enough about Duke Tobin where basically he's like, there's always just a handful of super elites. Those are like the top four picks, right? You know, in this case, it's what? Barkley, Chubb, and are you thinking like Minka Fitzpatrick? Nelson. Okay, so I'm thinking of the position players. Yeah.
Minka.
Yeah, so there's like five guys. Okay, they're not getting those. So now after that, it's kind of this like jumble, right? So I think you're – a trade could happen because, yeah, as it plays out, they've got specific needs. And, you know, as they get to 21, you know, they could say, hey, yeah, our five guys or our group of four, whatever we like, still available. We can move back because even if it's like Joe Mixon last year, as you astutely pointed out, they're not moving that far back if they think Joe Mixon's being taken or if they, you know, so I think if they have a specific couple guys in mind, and you have Billy Price from Ohio State going there at 26. If he's available, or James Daniels is available, or some of your other options, I think for sure it's in play. Because why not?
Yeah, well, but here's the thing: the same reason they were willing to move from 12 to 21, outside of obviously that's how they got Courtney Glenn, but the same reason they felt the draft fit them better at 21 is the reason they'd be willing to move back to 26. Because they see that glut right there as a place where they'd be comfortable. And it doesn't lock – they wouldn't feel locked in. Like if they're sitting there at 21 and you still have Daniels and Wynn and Price, and then you throw in a couple of the linebacker prospects or maybe a tight end or a corner or a lot of different directions where they could go, and they feel pretty good that maybe Price is number one on their board – which, you know, I clearly by picking him now two straight mocks in a row, I think he's their desired target. But I would say they're willing to go other directions to where if he's not there, those other guys that would be with, you know, on in that little section, they're totally comfortable with. And Plan B comes in, and as far as center goes, and at 46, they're maybe targeting Frank Ragnow out of Arkansas, or now because they added the third, they can move up to assure that they get Frank Ragnow, you know, but instead they take, you know, whoever this year's version of William Jackson the third is, right? Which we've talked about, which is the concept of everybody says you need this position, but you better take the best player available if you have net high. Maybe it's Leighton Vander Esch, maybe it's Dallas Goedert, whoever it is. You would have the assets to take care of, I think, the center position later and get the guy that you would be targeting and assure he doesn't get stolen out from underneath you because you have the extra draft capital. To me, that's why it maybe makes more sense.
And it could be a, you know, you only do it if the scenario you're presenting, whether it's Atlanta or whoever else, an extra third is acquired. It could be part of a larger domino of Bengals move back to 26, also move up in the third to, you know what I mean? Where it's like they're doing the deal contingent on an already trade, on an already predetermined trade up again, just to make sure they're in a position. They're not waiting till Saturday or late Friday night to try to do something when the pressure's really on. So, they've got a long history of drafting 21, Paul. We'll get into that in a few weeks, but it mixed results there. But again, I think it's always about that BPA. And I think once you're in your 20s, that's kind of what you're doing, right? I even if you have a glaring, quote unquote, glaring need, the team wanted to get out of that box of maybe having to take a tackle. They did. So why wouldn't everything be on the board, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely on the board, and let's talk about some of those guys that are on the board and weigh some things. A few names that I just threw out there, I want to sort of dig through. Let's just start by digging through this interior offensive line thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's a consensus, and that's what Lance Dierlein later will talk about, is that Ragnow, Daniels, Price, and then there's a big fall off. I think most people would agree that if you're trying to really hit the ball hard here, if you're trying to land at least a double, maybe a home run at the center position, it's one of those three. Pro Football Focus, who we'll have on next week, has written a lot about Ragnow, how they think he's the best out of all of them. But he's maybe does it a little uglier, so since it's not as pretty, he hasn't gotten as much love from other people. But he's actually, if you look at just getting the job done, he's been more effective. I'll let them really get into that more because they love him. And they're not alone. There's a lot of people that do. Isaiah Wynn is really interesting to me. And here's why. You could plug him in at guard right away. So he's your starting right guard. You don't have to worry about – we've talked a lot about the Christian Westerman, Alex Redmond thing. But Wynn would, I think, be a very clear upgrade from those guys. You could plug him in at guard. He's played so much tackle that he's an option there. If things blow up and Jake Fisher and Cedric Obwehi are just continue to not get it done – you have an option of Wynn now out there as well, and then you could play Redmond next to him. I mean, when Andrew Whitworth came in the league, he was a guard, and people said he could never play tackle, and where are we at now? I'm not saying Isaiah Wynn's Andrew Whitworth. I'm saying that's what they said about Andrew Whitworth when he was drafted.
Yeah, that is interesting because the Bengals, say what you want about them, do like the variety or ability to play multiple positions. I don't know how Frank Pollock feels about that, to be honest. We know their front office likes that idea. Frank has a say, and I guess we'll learn a lot more about what that say is and what that means going forward. Wynn is interesting. To me, Paul, I'll go back to the centers because to me it's the one – look, I think you can get a plug-and-play guy. Like, I think – Westerman and Redmond did enough in practice to others, not Paul Alexander, but for others, up until the time they finally played. And I think their game tape, while a little rough, as rookies essentially, gave enough to Marvin and again to Pollock and to the front office that they're okay with that battle. And whoever wins, I think they're okay with that. I think the same can be said for right tackle. I know I drive people crazy. And the fact that Marvin even threw out said maybe winning the right tackle job this past, like that might also drive – maybe Marvin was just saying that. I don't know. But so to me, I think center is the way to go. And I like those guys. And I think, whatever that is, first round, second round, just get it done. Just do it. Plug and play. Starter. And I think – Wynn and I just don't see these centers going, I guess, Paul. You know what I mean? So maybe you're right. Wynn is the guy that they have like a first round grade on and they take him and it's like, no, he's our plug and play right guard. And that's fine. Like, you know what I mean? But I guess that's all I want out of it is just it's this team to finally pick a starter, number 20, 21 or 26, whatever it may be. Just pick a guy who's going to play, when's that first OTA?
You know, on May 22nd, excuse me, he's the starter. And I think these guys, Paul, the more you read about it and the more you look at this current roster, it could be that guy, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And yeah, James Daniels, getting into like offensive line play and who's the best. I mean, Look, I know this. I know Kirk Ferentz called him the most NFL ready center he's been around. And Iowa, by the way, has had a few good offensive linemen during his extended history. I'll stand by that as a good thing. I know some people who are amongst the most respected in the draft pundit business. Daniel Jeremiah in particular has come out and stood on the table and said, this is one of the best centers I've evaluated in 5 years. James Daniels can show up and play right away. I don't think they would lose if he was the guy, and you could make an argument he should be the guy. I think most people put him above Price. The one thing we know is there's, you know, the conversation that I had was at the end of last week's pod and the conversation with Mo, and that was, look, part of Price's evaluation, and I think part of why the Bengals would be even more comfortable moving back with him is the pectoral thing. Nobody seems to be concerned that he's not going to play in camp or certainly start the regular season, and you have to let his what he can be in the long run as a player mean more.
Right.
It needs to mean more than he might miss some of your OTAs. Like, if your evaluation is he's the guy, then he's got to be the guy.
Yeah. The only thing that comes with that is the injury, and you know what, the drumbeat, right, of first round picks of guys drafting guys who are already hurt. What does that mean? That, you know, people have blasted this medical staff for years, and you know the decisions to do those things. So that'd be the one thing. I mean, you kind of, it's more of a PR hit, right? I think people would be excited that you picked a center and it's not Russell Bodine. So it'll be like, on one hand, the Bengal fan will toast, but then on the other, it'll go right to another injured guy. They say he'll be okay. We'll see him in 3 years. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Which is not fair to Billy Price. And it's obviously not fair to the medical staff, but that'd be the one sort of part of Thursday night if his name is called that early in the, or late Thursday night.
Yeah. Now let's can we talk about the tie? Like, when we talk about like Hayden Hurst, Dallas Goedert, you can get into Andrews from Oklahoma. Do you hate that? Do you hate one of those guys? You know, if you see maybe one of them could slide to 46, you probably don't hate them as much. Mike Gesicki would maybe be more of a guy there. Is there any one of those that you like? Is there any one of the – do you just feel like they should just be staying away from the tight end market that early?
Yeah, that's the boat I'm in, Paul. I think – and I understand that it's, hey, Tyler Eifert, you can't count on him. We've had that conversation. However, I think his re-signing, clearly the team feels good about him physically. They like Tyler Croft. For some reason, CJ Uzomah is on everyone's mind. Duke Tobin's asked about it at the combine. Marvin Lewis says, oh, CJ. I mean, like, I don't know why that's a thing. But, you know, even though we like CJ personally and he's a great Pokemon player, so to me, I don't know. I just think, again, it goes to – and maybe I'm too rigid. Maybe I'm inflexible and very narrow-minded by saying pick a starter. Because to me, Paul, if you pick a tight end, this is a guy that's not seeing the field. And even if Tyler Eifert is hurt in week two, let's be real. Is the draft pick playing over Tyler Croft and CJ Uzomah and Ryan Hewitt? Like, probably not.
No, probably not. And I hear you on pick a starter, but the other side of it is also when you re-sign Tyler Eifert, you design the offense around right. the tight end position. And yeah. when you do that, and then he gets hurt inevitably, where are you left? You just spent your offseason designing the offense around this guy. And when he's not there, which you really need to be prepared for, and oh, by the way, you also have three dudes in contract years there.
Yeah.
What do you do? You're going to leave yourself in a lurch again.
Yeah.
And there's guys out there that can be game changer for you. I think Goddard can be a Pro Bowl player. And tight ends have come from the middle. You know, all these great tight ends we talk about in the league now, a lot of them, most of them have come from the middle rounds. I mean, yeah. whether you're talking about Zach Ertz, whether you're talking about Rob Gronkowski, whether you're talking about Travis Kelce, you're talking about mid-round picks that developed. Jimmy Graham. I mean, so what you would say, you don't have to use the number one, but, you know, if one of those guys will probably slide to 46 and be really enticing there, I would definitely be in the boat of picking a tight end there. It'd be a little yes. harder to do it 21, maybe in the trade back scenario, but yeah. I would have no problem if Goddard, Hurst, Gesicki was the selection at 46. None.
Yeah. What I'll do is I'll say I like tight end over receiver. I mean, because, you know, I think this receiver class isn't, I mean, what? Calvin Ridley's the guy you hear the most, and he's, I mean, what, a mid-round pick? In the yeah. first, I mean, mid-first round pick. Mid-first. You know what I mean? You're not talking about, like, these high-end receivers. So, to me, Paul, if we're looking at it from the Bengals' point of view. So, from the Bengals' point of view, I think Goddard's the guy because there's the small school thing. But look, Hayden Hurst is 24.
Yeah.
You know, he'll be actually 25 when the seat, like, in camp. I mean, correct. William Jackson III is an older guy. Hayden Hurst, you can't deny his athleticism, you know, but again, you're talking about these guys going to be 30 by the end of his rookie deal.
Yeah.
Like, he could be a great player. He could go to four straight Pro Bowls or whatever. But I guess if I'm looking at it from the Bengals' point of view, I think tight end is too early in the first round. And so now you're looking at a guy who's not going to play a ton, has time to develop, at the very least is going to sit behind Tyler Eifert, Tyler Kroft till whatever point he's needed. I don't know. Then I guess I'd go with the guy who's got a little bit of development but has some of those, you know, all the fun athletic potential and the hands.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and maybe they're, you know, maybe they're looking a little bit further down the line at time. Yeah. Maybe it's one of those two third-round picks, and you do find somebody with a little bit more of a developmental side because you have those three guys you know for this year, you hope. Right. I mean, who knows what the injury thing will play out there. But so, yeah, it needs to be addressed, and that's just a personal thing is, you know, you cannot sign Tyler Eifert and build your offense around a guy and assume that he's going to be there, or else you're putting yourself right back into the same spot that you were. And you've got to start thinking about what 2019 looks like at that position. It's just too important to Andy Dalton. Let's talk about you mentioned receivers. You know, I spent a lot of time going through sort of the receiver group and taking a look at that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they don't take one, or if it's just one of those. I don't even really count those three seventh-round picks as picks. Right. It's like they're right. just glorified, undrafted college free yeah. agents. But, you know, I went through it. It's really hard. It will be a very complimentary type of player when you're talking about what that's going to be. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't take one at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at that receiver room, and we've talked about on one hand, the disaster it's been since the end of 2015. You know, how many draft picks, and you throw Alex Erickson in now, undrafted, and Brandon LaFell signing, and that still isn't fixed, you know. But you got all these guys who none of them have played, whether it be by injury, whether it be by healthy inactive, whether it be by just no snaps. I don't see – unless that guy that you're going to draft, you're like, we're picking him because we're cutting him. Like I that like yeah. That's the only way that can happen, right? Because I mean, Josh Malone, you know, I when you draft a guy, it's all roses, right? What he can be, what he can do, what, you know, all these things, that's great. And we understand things change as time goes on. But you're right, Paul. If you really like these guys, find a way to get them on the field. This receiver class is just not, which is so weird to say, right? Like in this passing, the way the game is and the way college is, and you know, it's just kind of shocking to me that you get this receiver class. Who knows? Maybe the bunch of Pro Bowlers will come out of these middle rounds, and we're all morons. But that, does Cortland Sutton do much for you? I know Bearcats fans are shuddering, but like, DJ Moore. Yeah. I mean, like these guys are like,
Yeah. You know, I think one guy that the Bengals have had their eye on, who would be a later round guy, and in our series I'll speak about him, and that's Doris Fountain from Northern Iowa. You know, I think he fits the profile of what will be a pick from them, and that's freak athlete who needs some polish as a receiver. You know, state champion hurdler and long jumper who's still kind of figuring it all out. He came from the small school, so he's a little off the radar as well, but who could do something special for you in the long run. So a guy like that in with one of those three fifth-round picks trying to – I feel like the Bengals are always trying to recreate for previous magic. Yeah. And so I'm predicting them in the fifth round to take a corner who washes out, a safety and a receiver, and try to get George Iloka and Marvin Jones again. You know, I think, and I could see Fountain being the type of guy, somebody like that, could be certainly be in play for them, or a Marcel Aitman out of Oklahoma State, and maybe a little earlier, who was, you know, the other thing the Bengals love to recreate, they love the other guy. When the one guy gets all the attention, you know, whether it was Cody Core, who was playing across from Laquon Treadwell, whether it was James Wright, who was playing behind Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry. We've seen them do that all the time. Well, Marcel Aitman played across from Biletnikoff Award winner James Washington, and played pretty well, by the way, but had a little bit of the shine taken off of him because Washington was such a big deal. Something like that may be happening for them. But outside of that, I just don't see anything bigger. You know, they're counting on – they've already made those picks in their eyes the last few years. And, in fact, I looked this up, the last 13 receivers the last 2 years have been taken in the first two rounds. The Bengals are the only team that took two of them. When they took John Ross in the first round, of course, took Tyler Boyd in the second round in 2016. Nobody has more young draft capital built up into the receiver position than they do, and they have A.J. Green as well. So, you know, they've already made their selection when you start talking about receiver. But that's the type of guy I look at when I'm looking at where the Bengals go with that receiver position. Freak athlete, they think they can maybe develop into something.
You mean they're not going to recreate Jake Elliott by taking Daniel Carlson in the fifth
round?
They
like to recreate the ones that go well, I believe. I know.
But Jake Elliott won a Super Bowl, Paul. How did that not go well?
Did not go well for the Bengals. Did not go well for Randy Bullock. It did not go well for our Twitter feeds. There were a number of things that did not go well with that.
you mentioned Fountain. I think that fits almost too perfectly. Like, didn't go to the combine. Jay Hayes coached him at the East-West Shrine game. Like, it's just kind of, you know.
Yeah, they're around him. Yeah.
John Hayes, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Like, it's forgive my Hayes confusion. It's just, you're right. It just kind of fits the
fits the mold.
Yeah.
let's quickly touch on running back and then wrap this up. Yeah. So that's another position. Clearly, they're set. Giovanni Bernard, which, by the way, congratulations. Yeah. Recently engaged Giovanni Bernard.
Yeah.
Big ups to him. And so Giovanni Bernard, Joe Mixon, quote, bell cow back. They're set there. This is another. What do you it's a matter of what do you want out of this pick? Do you want a guy who's a backup who can carry the ball? Do you want a special teamer? I think beyond anything, you know, you get the feeling they want someone who can do something that they don't have yet. And to me, the one thing they don't have that you can get out of this position is special teams, and in particular, maybe a dynamic returner who's also your third or fourth running back. And now you can find a guy to fill that role for you. You start looking around, those guys are out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about this even last year, Paul, when we kind of knew Joe Mixon was a foregone conclusion. I'm not a big believer in the first round draft pick running back. I mean, Alvin Kamara. I mean, like, the list is on and on and on of guys you can get rounds 3 through 5 and get an all pro season. So to me, Paul, I think this is, you know, if you're keeping all those picks at the end in the 5th round, in the 7th round, I don't even know if you need a kick returner anymore. Yeah. I mean, like, Alex Erickson, like, first of all, I mean, you got Mark Murphy. I mean, the rules changed again a little bit. I forget, but Murphy's like, we're going to get rid of this altogether if things don't change. Like, so now what are you talking about, a punt returner? I mean, you already got one. I don't know. I mean, maybe if Tariq Cohen is
That's what you're talking about, like, right? I mean, that's what they're looking – that's what you would be looking for.
You'd be looking for. Right. So maybe if that guy's there late, and honestly, Paul, I'm not going to – there could be 7 of those guys. You know what I mean? Where I just – maybe there's not. Maybe there's 1, and they have to do it. But I'm hesitating to name a name because I just think it's not a priority. It's like a – it's one of those picks that's got to come late after you address O-line, after you address tight end, and next week when we talk about some of the defensive needs here – you know,
yeah,
sure. Find that guy later. But to me, if you're, you know, Brian Hill proved he could run the ball in the NFL last year. So, you know what I mean? So I think if Tariq Cohen or that kind of guy is out there, you know
that guy, sure. That guy this year is Nyheim Hines, I think, from NC State. You know, he's your Tariq Cohen type, but people see what Tariq Cohen did, and he's going to be taken off the board before the Bengals are willing to go running back, almost certainly. If the Bengals wanted to be aggressive at that position, he'd be the type of guy I think they would be wanting to go after. You know, incredible track star type of guy, very elusive, can help you in the return games, you know, really can do it all. And if you need to hand it to him, can do that. Hell, he could even pop out. He's a transitioned receiver. You could even pop him out there if you wanted to, if you needed help out there. That's who that would be. To me, though, it's one of those 7th round picks, one of those 3 picks right at the end of the draft. You take whoever's your favorite preferred free agent running back, make sure you get him. And, you know, a guy that the Bengals have been linked to and that I think, you know, I love. You look back last year, Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, 2 biggest running back steals of the draft. Can we agree on that? I think we'd agree on that, right? Yeah. Both in the top 7 of PFF's elusive rating of making guys miss, you know, because it's so hard to predict when you get into bad offensive lines and good offensive lines and what guys are making people miss is what it's about, right? That's where you can find the gems. This year, number two in that was Boston Scott at Louisiana Tech. He's little. He's 5'6". He's a scat type guy, but he's 197 pounds, so you get little thickness out of that. I mean, he broke 51 tackles and 199 touches last year. He's one of the most elusive guys in football. He could return kicks. He's so small in that he's 5'6" that I think he's more of a college free agent type, but maybe he's a type. If that exists of who the Bengals will go after, that's probably who it is, because you're talking about end of the draft, forgotten type of guy, but has an upside for a reason, because he, you know, showed that he could be tough to bring down. That's probably about where they go when it comes. One thing that we skipped over, I just want to touch on real quick. Would you take a tackle? Are you into any of the tackles, or are you okay with letting Jake Fisher and whatever play out?
No, I'm not okay with that. I would. That's kind of why I was so hesitant on tight end, Paul, is because I think it's got to be a starter in round one. So to me, that's a center, because I think all three of those guys we talked about could play. Round two for me, Paul, is that tackle. So I know we kind of kicked around Orlando Brown a week ago, you know, talking about his terrible combine, but the tape plays better than that. Whereas I think Cedric Oboye, he might have been the other way around, where, you know, you look back and his measurables are fantastic. But then when you really looked at the tape, you're like, oh, wow, Johnny Manziel ran away from a lot. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I like the project-ish tackle if they stay in the second round. Like, let Bobby Hart and Jake Fisher and or Cedric Oboye and or Alex Redman, whatever it is, kind of battle it out. But then here's that guy. And that might, you know, I don't know where Wynn fits into this, you know, if he's gone by then or whatever, but, you know, or in your scenario, they trade up, you know, I think I would like the idea of a right tackle being drafted early in the second round, just because I think, you know, we've seen enough from Jake Fisher to not know anything. Like, and he's in a contract year.
Yeah. I agree.
You know,
I agree. At the very least, you could be drafting somebody who could be competing and be a swing guy. You know, it's not necessarily ushering Jake Fisher out the door, but it's you got to protect yourself. You can't be drafting for a completely open position next year.
Right, exactly. And look, hey, Cedric Oboye, Jake Fisher, Bobby Hart, really? You want to roll with that? Like, I mean, we've seen all that film.
And Cordy Glenn and his injury history.
Yeah, so that's why I think while the Bengals did the right thing with the Cordy Glenn trade, they did the right thing to move to 21 to not be boxed in. I still think if those guys are there, meaning, you know, the center and the best tackle that you think, or that value, whatever it may be, you still got to pick that guy, because it's just – I mean, we could still be talking about this again, either midseason or this time next year, if it goes bad.
Yeah, so. And at 46, there's a good chance that some of these tackles that they like are still around. That's what happened in 2015. I mean, they could totally be recreating 2015 a little bit if they go offensive line, and trying to fix that. If at 46, one of those, whether if maybe Connor Williams falls, or maybe they get happy and think, oh, let's go Orlando Brown or McGlinchey or anybody. It just turns out it wasn't as favorable as they thought. Jake Fisher, they thought, was in play for them at 21, and that was in 2015. And they ended up taking away he and still got Fisher later. So you don't know who's going to be there. So we'll see who that is. You know, a guy like Connor Williams, you could see a potential fall for him if teams didn't like what they saw in him. Let me bring in Lance Zierlein from NFL Media. A lot of good conversation about a lot of guys that we just talked about, and insight from a guy who really understands the depth of this draft. So good stuff with him. Here's my conversation with Lance Zierlein of NFL Media.
All right, continuing our draft coverage here in the BBP. Let's bring in NFL.com draft analyst Lance Zierlein. You're based out of Houston, but you've been doing NFL draft coverage forever. How long have you been have you been kind of diving into the draft?
Since 2001, I guess.
Yeah.
It was the first year I got into it, kind of hot and heavy, and I've just been doing. I've been doing it for the for NFL media since fall of 2014.
Yeah, and it is just a heavy lift. When do you start diving in on all of the draft? You know, things that you. I mean, it's like every single scouting report. Seems like it has your name attached to it now. When did you start on that?
Well, they all do. I'm the only one doing them. So it'll be 500 every year, minimum 500. And I start in the summer, in June. I start watching and writing notes on my summer series that I do that gives me a head start of knowing the prospects headed into the summer. I do it for a piece that comes out on NFL.com about players to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's impressive, and congrats on all the work you've done this year. It's great stuff. I want to start with some Bengals position and that are sort of they're looking at in the first or second round. The one I kind of am starting with everybody at is center. And first round, second round, James Daniels, Billy Price, Frank Ragnow. What do you see with those three, and are there other names that should be in consideration in that first, second-round center spot?
No, I think those are going to be the three that you look at, you know, for the first. I don't know, Ragnow maybe second. I kind of have a third-round grade on him, but he may go earlier. For centers, that sounds about right. I think Daniels is the best center. I think the most powerful center, the guy who, you know, would have fit what – Paul Alexander liked when he were there would have been Billy Price, but I'm not sure which direction they're going to head in now from terms of exactly what the offensive line coach is going to look for. But those are the three guys. I mean, the big guy is Frank Ragnow. He's got a lot of size. The strongest is going to be Billy Price. The most athletic and the most complete is going to be James Daniels. So there's three very different things that you get from all three of them. And it will really just be, I think, kind of a matter of taste of what is most important to you in terms of unlocking your running game and, you know, what type of pass pro you're looking for as well.
Who do you think would be the best fit for a zone block and run type of scheme? That's kind
James,
of where Frank
I mean, without,
Paul, yeah, yeah.
Yes, James Daniels without question.
Yeah, yeah. That's
but here's the thing with zone blocking centers. You can find them. You don't have to go get them early. You can find guys who can move. Dejon Allen from Hawaii, you can get in the sixth or seventh, and he may end up being a starter for you. I mean, that's one of those things where you're looking for a certain type of player. And you know, the Houston Texans traded a sixth-round pick for Chris Myers from the Denver Broncos, and he was a longtime starter here in Houston for Gary Kubiak's own scheme. You want to get somebody who's smart. And look, James Daniels would be the very best, but sometimes it's a balance if you say, well, he may be the very best, but, you know, we can spend a fifth-round pick and get this center for this, you know, for this zone scheme and get another player at a higher priority position than center in the first round. And typically that's how teams operate. A lot of times teams aren't going to, especially zone teams, are not going to spend a first round pick on a center.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you make maybe off the radar then at center? What about, are there mid-round guys that you like? What about TCU? Patrick Morris, I think, has been linked to the Bengals a little bit. What do you think of him? Or are there middle-round guys that you think kind of stick out to you that could be kind of sleepers at that position?
Morris, I don't even know if he gets drafted, but if he does, he'll be seventh, the priority free agent. So, I mean,
Boy,
he tested great. He tested great, so that's the kind of – but that's what I'm talking about. You can find late guys. I would say I think Mason Cole from Michigan is somebody who could fit into that. Martinez Rankin, I think, actually would be a really interesting option in this probably third round at center. I think Martinez Rankin, who a lot of people are projecting, some have him at tackle, some have him at guard. I would bump him all the way into center where he's been taking some snaps. He's another player that I think would work there. Sam Jones from Arizona State, I don't like him at all at guard, but if you move him to center, all of a sudden that's a late round. And then, you know, undrafted free agents, I think Brad Lumblade from Oklahoma State, you mentioned Patrick Morris is another one of those guys. And I think Scott Questenberry from UCLA and probably in the fifth round is another fifth, sixth, who could end up being a starter in the zone scheme for the you don't have to be the most athletic. You just have to hit a certain level of athleticism. And Quessenberry also happens to have some pretty decent strength. So I think he could be another fit from UCLA and, you know, beyond round four.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of, you know, the Bengals are searching for sort of a playmaking safety, a ball hawk type that could range back there, get picks, be in the right spot. Where do you see a guy that you could get in this draft? You know, first round, second round, and then maybe if there's somebody who would go a little bit further back than that.
Well, Justin Reed fits in the first round. It's a little early for the Bengals, but actually it's not even that early since they moved back. I think Justin Reed is actually a pretty decent fit from Stanford. Fits exactly the kind of stuff that you're looking for in terms of the skill set that you talked about. He would be one. I think Jesse Bates is another one in the second round who from Wake Forest who has great cover skills, can match up in the slot, can range over the top, and really has excellent ball skills. Tarvarius Moore from Southern Miss. He's bigger. He's not as big as Jesse Bates, but he's faster. He is a guy who ran a 4.32 at his pro day, probably a 4.40 once you take him off the old turf. Explosive leaper. Has 1 year as a starter, but was a really productive year. And an Armani Watt, third or fourth round, there's another rangy playmaking safety. The only problem is he's a little bit more you know, he's a guy to me who's a little bit more feast or famine. So I would say those are three names that you could look for. And if you want to go even later than that, Trey Walker from Louisiana Lafayette is a day three option that that could be in the plans for a team like the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah. What do you think is the deepest position in this draft overall?
Probably running back. That's usually the case, but everyone's going to say guard. Guard's pretty deep, but I think running back is even deeper because I like the depth, the high end, and then the mid-level depth I think goes on for quite a while. I mean, you know, there's some guys in there that I think could end up being starters potentially who some people don't envision being starters. I think I see some potential starters in there. Guard is a deep position this year. You know, cornerback, I think cornerback has some pretty good depth as well, especially once you get rounds 2 through 4. I think you have some good players. DJ Reed from Kansas State is a fourth, fifth rounder who's really, really talented. Devontae Harris from Illinois State is a fourth rounder who I think has some starting talent. MJ Stewart from North Carolina, probably a third round pick who has safety or cornerbacks starting potential. So there are a few guys in here who I think make sense in terms of the depths as a third round to fourth round players who could become eventual NFL starters are definitely cornerback threes. And really a cornerback three is the same as a starter today.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are some names that surprise you at how much talk they're getting? Maybe they're a little bit overrated in your mind that you're not as high on as sort of a consensus is. Is there any that stick out to you?
Well, I mean, Josh Allen, but I understand it because he plays such a position of tremendous need, so and a high priority position. So I understand where that's coming from. I'm not as high on DJ Moore, or Mike Hughes, as other people. Cornerback from USF and the wide receiver DJ Moore from Maryland. I'm not quite as high on those guys as some other people are. I would say, maybe Marcus Davenport. I think he's the 30th best player. There's been talk about him in the top 10 or 12 picks. I think that feels a little high to me for him. So those are some guys that I think are maybe a little bit overrated who I'm hearing talked about way, way earlier. Connor Williams would be another one from Texas who a lot of people have been sticking Connor Williams with the Bengals from early on at number 12. Mm-hmm. I don't really see it. I think that's way too early for Connor Williams.
What was it about Hughes and Davenport that you don't see that maybe some other people are claiming they do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, just Hughes, he didn't run as fast as everyone thought. He was in the 4.5s. I didn't see as sticky in man coverage consistently. I thought some routes could lose him and shake him a little bit more than you would like for being a player who's not even 6 foot. With Davenport, it was just very inconsistent. I mean, you could get really excited about flashes against Baylor, but Baylor was terrible. And and when you watch him against Southern Miss, I didn't think he was – he doesn't look like a bendy, real edge trimmer at pass rush, you know, as a pass rusher that you kind of like. And he wasn't as strong as guys like Eric Armstead Beckner from Oregon were coming out when they were drafted by San Francisco. So I didn't think he had quite the size and strength of those guys. He didn't have the bend of some of the edge rushers we've seen in the past. So I think he's the 30th best player. There are other people who are way more excited, but I don't see the consistency and I don't see the same flexibility and bend around the corner, the dominance that you want to find out of an edge rusher consistently on tape.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, all the covers that you've been able to do, all the scouting reports you've been able to do are impressive, man. And so anybody that wants to follow along can follow along. Where should people find you on Twitter?
At Lance Zierlein, Zierlein is the best way to follow me on Twitter.
Yep, and at NFL.com. On the draft, I'm sure you'll be in their mix. Is there anything particular people should be looking for here coming up as the draft is closer or as it executes?
Well, yeah, every Tuesday we have Mock Draft Live where I'm on that on NFL Network, and then I'll be on Path to the Draft the entire week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the draft week, the 23rd, 24th, 25th. And then you can catch my draft coverage along with Matt Money Smith and Bucky Brooks on NFL Now. So if you want to keep up with the draft and you're on the go on a mobile device, just hit the NFL Now app and you can keep up with every pick from every round. We'll have analysis for every pick every round. You won't miss a single pick.
That's awesome. Lance, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And maybe our Everton Blues will eventually break the top six, but I'm not counting on that anytime, maybe in my lifetime.
Yeah, I've been too excited for too long. I'm not looking for that to happen either.
I appreciate it, man. Have a good one.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
Okay, that was thanks to Lance Zierlein for joining and chatting a little bit. And on that note, you know, I mentioned that he's also an Everton fan, as I am. And the only thing you can do when you watch Everton is drink. And that's a perfect opportunity for me to tell you about 50 West and how delicious their beers are. Because when I need to have a drink at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning because my team stinks and I can't stand watching them anymore, I'm going into the fridge, I'm opening up, and I'm pulling out my cans of American Lager or my can of 50 West. I actually have two – I have both six-packs in there now, and I choose how intense of a loss it was that I need to go grab. They're both delicious, so make sure you're picking that up. And, of course, always make sure you're getting down to 50 West. Sam Volleyball League's going on now. Of course, they've got all their huge space over there at the Production Works, the canoe livery. Hopefully, at some point, it will be warm enough that you can get a canoe in the water. And you can get out there and just stay active. Their running groups have already been formed. You can join them in their running groups. Thanks, 50 West, for all they do for us. And again, 50 West live BBP announcement in the works. Teaser. There's another teaser for you. It's coming soon. Keep an eye out for that. All right. So now it is time. Power rankings are dumb, so we choose to power rank dumb things. And it is time to talk about this week. Thanks to our readers. We tell you at Polina Jr., at Jim Ozarski on Twitter, send us things that you want us to power rank, dumb things that strike you, that you feel like we need to dive in on. So you did this week, so we're going with the one that was given to us, and that was ranking airplane snacks, the airline snacks. So you can't go – like Jim's a high roller. He's going to boss his way up to like Delta Comfort, and then he's going to get like the meal that you pay for. He'll probably – you know, he'll have a couple of drinks, and he'll be eating the fruit and all that. See, I'm talking the actual – the free snacks that those blue-collar people like me are back eating in 25F, right? That's what I'm talking about here. So this is what we're doing. Do you have are you ready or do you need more time?
No, I'm good to go.
All right, let's go top 2. What's your top 2?
Okay, top 2. Number 2 is the cookie. And I leave it just cookie cuz I think every airline's got a different version of a cookie. So I do like a cookie because I always have coffee. So
yeah.
I am a fan of the cookie as my second number two.
It's a little vague. It's a little vague. I'd like for you to be specific because Delta has a cookie, but you get the Bischoff cookie, which I think is my – it's my number one. I'm just going to spoiler alert this. The Bischoff cookie I think is the best thing that anybody offers. When you can get that, all is well. I'm excited. I'm actually excited to get it. It doesn't feel like I'm only getting a little. I feel like I'm getting a lot for what you typically get, and it tastes good. And so I'm pro Bischoff cookie is my number one specifically. Okay. The other ones are all behind that somewhere. But that's fine. Yeah. What's your number one?
The honey roasted peanut.
Oh, the honey roasted peanut.
And I believe that's a Southwest special, isn't it? I don't really recall getting a honey roasted peanut elsewhere. I could be wrong.
I think you might be right. Yeah. I've not seen a lot of that.
Yeah, so I do like my coffee, I do like my cookie, but I also have a perpetual sweet tooth, and the honey roasted just seems to hit it pretty good with a Coke, you know. Yes. I always got a pair, Paul. So it depends on my mood, but the honey roasted is always a hard one to turn down if it's there.
I'm always just a water guy. I just get the water. I'm not really into getting the Coke or the coffee. I feel like especially with coffee, there's too much danger. Too much danger, potential for knockover. I'd rather not take that chance. I trust myself, but I'd rather not take that chance. Number one, the Stroop waffle, baby. No, that's my number two. I guess my number one was the cookie. Number two for me is the Stroop waffle. The Stroop waffle. I love the Stroop waffle. I think it's delicious. It's unique. You literally never eat it anywhere but there. And that's why it sort of makes it like a special treat because – nowhere else in the world am I eating a Stroop waffle, but when I get it there, I'm like, oh, it's like a plain delicacy, you know? So I get excited about that. That's why I have that. All right. Bottom two in the airplane food.
Pretzel is – I'm not a pretzel guy anyway. So, they're making me thirsty. I just – they're never good. I don't like pretzels generally. So, like, to me, that's number one – worst. Like, to me, Paul, there's no other. I know it's a cop out in a way, but I it's two and one. They'll come at me with the pretzel. I don't want the pretzel, and it's a turn down all the way. Like, I don't want this. Two and one.
What's the deal with airplane peanuts? I mean, like, that's all. Anytime I get the peanuts, that's all I think about is how they're just, it's just silly that you get. Even when you get like maybe your honey roast, I don't know. I still can't. I would agree with you. I think we're in agreement, which is rare for us. Pretzel is the worst. There's just – they're not good. There's like four of them. It's totally unfulfilling. So I'm with you on that. I have this – getting the peanuts is my number two as well. I don't like the peanuts. Just I'm always reminded of how silly it is that there's seven peanuts in here and we're supposed to like call that a thing. You know, I don't like it at all. All right.
Right.
Well, let's wrap it up here. Why are you mad? Are you still just holding on to the spring thing, or have you moved on to being mad about something else?
Well, I was probably mad at Sergio last year, this podcast, for winning the Masters because I'm not a fan of Sergio Garcia. The thing that made me happy was him putting five balls in the water and getting a 13 in the defense of his major. The thing that made me mad, Paul, was Sergio being Sergio and blaming everybody else and blaming his golf ball for the spin he put on it. And then having the gall to say later he felt he handled it like a Masters champion.
No.
Like, no. No, he didn't. It's like, and then he goes at, Rich Lerner tried to make a joke about, because Sergio and his wife named their first child Azalea. And Rich Lerner's trying to be funny and says, hey, you're not going to name your next kid Firethorn. And then, his wife goes at him on Twitter. And then Sergio goes at him. I'm just like, oh, just Sergio, just go away.
Yeah.
Like, he makes me mad all the time. And I just, Just did it again.
I'll tell you what kind of, this isn't what was making me happy before, but now that you mentioned it, what made me happy was that Sergio had to be there to put the green jacket on. We all could be reminded that he took a 13 earlier in the week, and he just been sitting around like drinking all weekend at Butler Cabin because he couldn't leave, and he was stuck there because he had to put the jacket on the real champ. Well, he didn't even make the cut this weekend. That kind of did make me happy. But what actually made me happy the most was the absurdity. The just complete absurdity. It just made it much more entertaining, the moment of Patrick Reed winning, of Nick Faldo going down the Imagine Dragons wormhole, not once, but twice. He's like, look, I'm all in on this Imagine Dragons storyline. This is totally going to humanize Patrick Reed and show that I am young and with it and totally in the pop culture. And so I'm going to save for the big moment when he wins, as Imagine Dragons once said, welcome to the new age. To the new age, and not think that he was not going to get completely crushed on every form of social media. And then I was even happier when I saw Imagine Dragons responding to it themselves on Twitter, and just to make fun of the whole thing on top of everything else. The whole Imagine Dragons storyline made me so happy. I loved it. I love when things like that just happen, because what is Nick Faldo thinking? What is he thinking? Why? Young Nick Faldo. Anyway, so that's my take. All right, I guess we're wrapping up next week. PFF, we'll have the long PFF episode. Jim and I will also be back, and we'll be talking defensive players. So we'll be diving a little bit into the defensive game. And hey, we might be talking about a new defensive free agent sign, depending on what happens this next week with Eric Reed. So who knows? Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Thanks to 50 West. Make sure you go pick up your Coast to Coast. Have a few of those. Pour some out for Jim and I as we're in the eye of the draft hurricane still. We're getting closer. We're almost there, almost through this thing. So anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening to BBP, and we will talk to you next week.